Anyway, thank you very much. Thank you for bringing that very nice memory back, definitely. From that moment, we have been in many different auditoriums also talking about these issues. And thank you for being also the one that is moderating this session. We are doing these comparisons between the different countries, particularly Europe, the FDA, and Health Canada, partially because of the interest of these three large agencies, but also because of the data that is available that facilitates this type of studies. The main objective is understanding how the information, what information is produced and how this information is produced, and understanding these differences and how these differences may affect the utilization of pharmaceuticals and, at the end, outcomes for patients. And as Rosa already indicated, we find a number of differences in all the studies we are doing. This is a study we are doing in collaboration with Teddy Equali, Rosa Rodriguez, a student, Colud, and also with Gordon Schiff, that is a physician in Brigham Women's Hospital. And we are working with him, several of us here, including Joel, Rosa, and Sarah, in a project where we are assessing the potential for what we call indications-based prescribing. That means that doctors should consider the indication was prescribing a pharmaceutical. And that's the reason why we are doing many of these studies assessing the indications. And this is what we're going to see today. We don't have any conflict of interest. And we'll go through the background, objectives, data, methods, results, discuss some conclusions, and also some, allow me to present some policy recommendations. When we talk about drug indication, it seems like everybody has an idea of what is a drug indication, but in reality, there is not a definition that is accepted by all the different organizations. In general, it's information about the intended use of a drug for a disease or condition, and then there is a set of contraindications, restrictions, and limitations of use. In practice, also, when we talk about indication, quite often we think that the indication is the health problem, the signs, symptoms, diagnosis of risks of a specific disease or that a patient has. However, this context of indication is a little more complex. If we think in terms of the health problem or risk on top, in this example of metformin, we see that in case of the health problem or risk, we will talk about type 2 diabetes. When we talk about the therapeutic need or the preventive need, in case that is a product used for prevention, we will talk in this case about glycemic control in patients with type 2 diabetes. And then when we put together the specific pharmaceutical, quite often the type of patients and also the disease, is when we arrive to this construct of indication, that is the construct that should be used. In the case of metformin, we consider that this is for type 2 diabetes, but in reality it's a product that is indicated as an adjunct to diet and exercise to improve glycemic control in others and children with type 2 diabetes mellitus. And this is what the FDA does. In this indication, you can see that we talk about this product as an adjunct product, and also the potential outcome, glycemic control we are searching for, the population, and also the disease. And that gives an idea of the complexity of the indications in contrast with this idea that the indication is just the health problem. Additionally, when we talk about the indication, there are a lot of different constructs, and we are also assessing these things, and we are finding, for example, that the indications that have been studied in clinical trials are different than the indications that have been approved by the regulatory agencies, including the three we are evaluating. But then the health technology assessment organizations are also considering a different indication. The payers, in this case CMS, for example, considers medically acceptable a different type of indication. The guidelines quite often come with their own indications. In studies done after the product is marketed, we come also with different indications, not to talk about the formularies that quite often restrict the indications in ways that have not been studied before. And also when we see in the decision systems like the CPOE, the indication can be different than the previous indications. Therefore, we are intending to come with something that can help us to navigate the complexity of the context we are seeing right now and the differences in the context. When we think about the FDA, they don't define what is indication, but they say that the label of the product must state that the drug is indicated for treatment, prevention, mitigation, cure, or diagnosis of a recognized disease or condition, or a manifestation of a recognized disease or condition, or the relief of symptoms associated with a recognized disease or condition. Then we have this idea of including the name of the drug and also including the reason in terms of prevention, of mitigation, or cure. But then there are a lot of other information that can be included as part of the indication, that is, for example, use an adjunct therapy in selected subgroup of patients, tests that are necessary for the use, limitations of use, reserve for specific situations that should be met before long-term use, that complicates this construct of indication. And then sometimes the information is not in the indication section, but we go to contraindication, restriction, limitations of use, and we see also information that constricts this the indication as presented in the indication section. When we assess the European Medicines Agency, EMA, also it's very similar. The idea is that the indication should define the target disease or condition, and then sometimes they have also different restrictions like the target population, and again contraindication, restrictions and limitations of use can be included in other sections of the summary of product characteristics, that is where the EMA presents the information around the indication. In Health Canada they have the drug monograph, and in there also we have the indications. They don't define what is an indication, but also again these ideas that the indication should include the use of an adjunct product, the optimal use, limitations, potential outcome restrictions, and etc. And again, we can go to other parts of the label, and in this case of the drug monograph, and find this information that is missing sometimes in the indication section. A lot of our documents, this is in the case of the FDA, we think of the label as the main indication, the main document that contains the indication, but in the US we have a lot of different documents that talk about indication, including the package inserts, the consumer medication instructions, the medication guides, prescription, writing by the doctors, the container level at the level of the pharmacy, and consumer medication information. Sometimes they have different information about what is the indication in these different documents. This is a comparison of new molecular entities that products never approved before, and new biologic license applications approved by EMA, FDA, and Health Canada between 1999 and 2014. We extracted information from the web pages of the different organizations. Everything is already available. FDA labels, summaries from EMA, and monographs from Health Canada. We assess differences in drug indications of the drugs approved by the three agencies. And we have two researchers that independently assess differences in indications, and a third researcher actually solve any type of problems we could find in disagreements in the indication. This is the number of products that have been approved in the period, 1999 to 2014, 152 new drugs and biologics, 122 were new molecular entities or chemical entities. Biologics represented, therapeutic biologics represented 30 products, close to 20% of all the drugs approved by the FDA. We found that 93 drugs were approved, or 61.2 were approved by the three regulatory agencies. This is the main, we want to see the outcome in the three agencies, including 63.3% of the blasts. 60% of the new molecular entities, And we found that these products have similar indications in 68.4% of the blasts and 73% of the new molecular entities. But then we have differences in the, in this case, in the total number of drugs. We found that in 9 cases, the products were similar in Health Canada and EMA, and difference in the FDA. In 9 cases also, in 9 drugs, the products were similar in Health Canada and FDA, and different in EMA. And then in 5 cases, they were similar in FDA and EMA, and different in Health Canada. And then we find 3 products with different indications in the 3 agencies. As you can see in the results, it seems like Health Canada typically has the same similar indications, because the same indications are difficult to find, than either EMA or FDA. And a small number of cases where the FDA and EMA has similar indications and Health Canada is different. Therefore, in some way, Health Canada is aligned either with EMA and or the FDA. This is an example of differences in indications. This is sodium oxybate, and this is for in the FDA approved for the treatment of cataplexy, that is a sudden loss of muscle tone in narcolepsy. And then also they have the excessive daytime sleepiness in narcolepsy as a second indication that, as you can see, is not approved in the other 2 agencies. In EMA, for example, they talk about treatment in patients in general. In Health Canada, they talk about adult populations. And then if you want to see the specific age group where the product is recommended, you have to go to other sections of the label or the manograph, complicating definitely the understanding of what the indication should be, where the doctor should find the information before prescribing these products. The indication is a critical element of drug information. Basically, the indication, as I mentioned, it doesn't talk specifically about the health problem. Links the medication with a specific health problem for a specific patient population. Therefore, it's the link between critical elements of the information that the doctors will have for prescribing. We found differences in the definitions in the different organizations, and also different constructs when how they put together this concept of indication. The clinical implications are, first, that a labeled indication in a country can be off-label in other countries. Also, it could be restrictions of access in specific countries, because in some systems, off-label drugs are not covered, but this is off-label in the U.S., maybe has been approved in EMA. And then there is the interpretation and application of the information from clinical trials and medical literature. When we read an article that is available in PubMed, for example, we don't have any information about if this article has been done according to the indications, restrictions, and limitations in EMA, in the FDA, or in Health Canada, therefore complicating the analysis of the results and the applicability of the different patient populations. We found differences in the indications approved by the 3 agencies, and that also the basis, clinical implications, and consequences for patient care of these discrepancies require further investigation, and we are working on this area. In terms of policy recommendations, this is the last slide, we need defining the content of indication, and particularly moving from this concept of health problem as the way of linking the patient with the drug or the health problem with the drug. We need to use more the indication as considered by the FDA, because this is how the clinical trial has been done. We have also the international harmonization that in a speed of Joel also indicated that we are trying right now to create a new round of harmonization. But again, different organizations are having different ways of considering what is the content of indication. And also that complicates the work of international pharmacovigilance systems, because maybe an indication is approving a country are not in a different country. Thank you very much.
So we've got about 5 minutes for specifically questions to Enrique, and then about 10 minutes for some general discussion. So anybody have any questions for Enrique?
We don't know exactly the number of indications that have been submitted by the different companies to the different agencies. It's possible that they submit some indications in the US and not in other countries. This is something that we are considering right now. There are some sources of information, for example, in the FDA. We can already check the indications proposed by the companies versus the final indications approved by the FDA, and this is a study we are right now in the process of putting together this information. But that will be a critical thing, considering if the pharmaceutical companies are the ones that decide the indication in a way that they present the information in a way that this is the indication we want to approve in this specific system or country or agency. Of this is more the work of the agency saying, with the information you provided, I am going to approve only this specific indication. We know that in the FDA, for example, with the evidence we have, is that the companies always try to get something that is very broad indication, a treatment of diabetes. And then the FDA is the one that is coming with restrictions, quite often limitations of use, restricted to specific populations, states, disease states, etc. But we found that the companies maybe are willing to have many different indications in many different countries and agencies because maybe this is the best for them instead of coming with a single indication that applies to every country, trying to expand as much as they can the indications in every single country.
Other questions? Go ahead.
I was wondering, so we know in the U.S. there's a lot of off-label use of drugs that are, regardless of the indications for being used for other things. I'm just wondering if the regulation in other countries is more strict if there's less off-label use.
Well,
I know it's outside the
scope of the study. No, it's an interesting question. Yes, it can be more restriction in other countries. Because quite often what happens in other countries is just the approval and the reimbursement of these products at the national level are based on specific indications. This is what happened, for example, in the UK, with NICE, that evaluate specific indications and the reimbursement occurred, or they want to occur specifically in this type of indications. However, it varies depending on the countries and also on the organizations.
There is a lot of off-label use in Canada. So Teddy, how do you pronounce his last name?
Yeah, Teddy Ekwale.
Looked at this off-label use in Canada. And depends on the drug class. But there was for some drug classes, a high level of off-label use.
In a study he did, this study you are mentioning here, he found more than 10% of all the prescriptions that was in Ontario, I believe.
No, in Montreal.
In Montreal, yes, exactly. In Montreal, were actually off-label, just off-label based on the indication. For the indication of wasn't approved for the reason that the doctor prescribed the medication. And he also found that in more than 3/4 of all these off-label medications that were prescribed off-label, that there were any type of evidence supporting the use of these medications as off-label medications.
So, Are there questions for any of the panelists, any of the presenters? Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here trying to formulate a question. I'm a retired general physician from the United States, and are there other clinicians in the room?
Yeah.
Yes. It's hard to come up with a good question other than to say it's a travesty. You know, these drugs are created, they're marketed now to the public, they're marketed to we physicians. You know, you were saying that somebody was saying we don't know that we physicians don't have a good sense of cost. It's much worse than that. Oftentimes we don't have a good sense of what the drugs do either, because you know these things get out on the market. You know, how are you supposed to learn? Well, you learn from a drug rep from the company. It's really a mess, you know. And so I guess if I have a question, it's all what the heck are we going to do about this? And how closely linked? If here's a question, maybe. How closely can we link this whole drug thing with the way the rest of the system is paid for? In other words, if you look at the U.S., Canada, and Europe, they're very different systems. Is there any wisdom we can gain there? I hope that's not too harsh, but that's really kind of how the picture looks. And I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. Another question. Am I way off on that?
Question. So a very simple answer is that the more the public pays for drugs, the more government has an interest in ensuring that drugs are being used properly, because that'll help control the cost to the government. So for instance, in Australia, about 10 or 15 years ago, they set up an organization which then was called National Prescribing Service, now is NPS, MedicineWise. They funded to the tune of about $35 million a year, and that organization's specific mandate is to do education with doctors and patients around appropriate prescribing and drug use. And the reason the Australian government is willing to put $35 million in is because they think they save more than $35 million a year from getting better, more appropriate prescribing and use.
Where was that?
Australia.
Yeah, Australia.
Yeah. I mean, the opioid problem, not to get off track here, but that's just another example of how things come off the rails. So.
It's definitely a very complex question. I think when we are talking from the regulation perspective, regulatory perspective, what we are seeing is that with any single drug is evaluated in clinical trials, is evaluated for some very specific patient population that doesn't represent at all where the product is going to be used. Therefore, we start with a lack of actual information about the use in the patients that this drug is intended to be used for. Therefore, we have initially the lack of information. And then the doctors, as you know, you have to start using these drugs And when you start increasing the complexity of the patients, the complexity of the diseases they have, multiple diseases, the complexity of the treatments they have, we know that, as many studies have been demonstrated until now, that it seems like we are killing a lot of different patients, a lot of patients every year, hundreds of thousands of patients every year, because of misuse we have of pharmaceuticals. Let's talk about opioids, for example. Let's talk about almost any single medication. Therefore, we start with a lack of information, and then we don't have appropriate decision systems to support what the physicians do. Right now, we have these electronic prescribing decision support systems that are right now being implemented, and maybe will help in some way to clarify some of the things that right now are being done. Because any single study demonstrates that the utilization of pharmaceuticals is inappropriate at best.
Rosa.
So just to add part of the complexity, as it was mentioned before, we talk about approvals today, but another study that we are doing is the post-marketing. Once the drugs are approved, what is happening with them? And talking about the FDA, we have the REMS, the risk evaluation strategies, black boxes, withdrawal, and you can see that many of the drugs that are fast-tracked in approvals are also with part of the big percentage of the withdrawals from the market, because once they are approved, adverse events or particularly safety concerns come out, and the regulatory agency has to withdraw them from the market. So it's really a complex thing, and how that affected in part with the off-label utilization.
But definitely the role of the regulatory agencies should be improved. You were talking before about harmonization of the different organizations, different agencies. Actually, we should start talking about harmonization of the FDA, because the FDA does many different things that are the opposite, depending on the different section that is approving the medicines. When you see the information that is presented in the indication section goes all over the place. Therefore, I think we have the problem with the harmonization, particularly because the information that the FDA puts together is the one that the industry presents to the FDA, not the one the FDA would like to see. Therefore, when you have to work with the information that somebody is presenting, and you cannot make many variations on this information, we have all these discrepancies we are looking at, not just international, but also in the FDA. It's curious to see how different can be the things that are approving and the information that has been presented.
One last question.
Sorry.
I just had a comment bringing you back to the difference of priorities and view timing for the FDA. Another thing to consider is that FDA reviews are done internally in-house. And we do want to keep
Actually, that's not. There's a rapporteur and a co-rapporteur appointed. So that's one. There are two national agencies involved in doing the initial evaluation, and then that goes back to the Committee on Human Medicine. I can't remember CMHP. Yeah, but so they do go up. The EMA is structured much differently than the FDA or Health Canada.
Yes, and that's part of the, I did a 2-week fellowship here this past summer.
Yeah.
And that's part of the, we have the differences in timing, and that was
what
you
did.
Yeah.
I
just wanted to respond to both as a partner to the FDA. Different from most of these other countries, the FDA and the standard-setting body, USP, is a different organization. We're kind of non-profit organization setting standards that are enforceable by the FDA when it comes to APIs and recipients. But so once the
time's up. Thank you to the presenters.
Thank you.